thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. On the show tonight, we have Richard Suherman, analyst at Maybank Sekuritas in Jakarta. Richard, thanks for joining us. You cover the EV industry, you cover the energy sector, I suppose, in Indonesia and perhaps even the region. Maybe we can go through with some focus on Indonesia. BYD, Tesla, Hyundai and others are reporting to be finalizing deals with Indonesia. It's going to be an exciting, a few years for the country. Maybe you can explore with us some ideas on these manufacturers entering Indonesia.
Yeah. I think we have seen massive foreign investment coming into Indonesia, particularly for an EV maker. And I think the main reason is that everyone's right now, they want to secure their raw material needs, right? I think I remember what Elon Musk said during his interview last year. In order to become a successful EV maker, means that you need to secure a raw material supply chains, right? And I think from the demand side, EV sales has grown exponentially, and penetration has grown a lot in the past few years. And I think it will continue to do so, and because the world right now is shifting toward clean energy. And therefore, I think securing a direct supply chain is a vital step for an EV maker. And we are also the largest producer for nickel, with about 47% of global market share. And our output has grown tremendously over the past 5 years, more than tripled. And this is mainly due to a strong support from the government. And we do aware that most of our current output currently is still in the form of class 2 supply, which is more suitable for stainless steel product. But with the recent newly found technology called HPAL, high pressure etched leaching, this technology able to convert our low grade nickel into a class 1 material. And with this new technology, we believe Indonesia will continue to become to play a major role for supplying nickel in the world. And aside from having those kind of advantage, we also have relatively more attractive labor costs in compared to other mineral producing countries. And it enables us to have a low cash cost in refining nickel. And from the market point of view as well, we also have a very large domestic market base. We are number 4 in terms of population, and we are also the 16th largest economy in the world. So I think Indonesia has the foundation to become a manufacturing hub for EV and battery. And for those reasons, I think Indonesia will continue to attract this many foreign investment coming here.
The argument before this is that unit economics for Indonesia has always been a tricky one to navigate. And while the GDP, say, for instance, for Indonesia is rather high, in fact, the highest when it comes to nominal GDP, but the nominal GDP for Indonesia is actually one of the lowest, highest being Singapore at 84,000 per capita GDP, Malaysia at 14,000, Brunei at 41,000, but Indonesia's nominal GDP is about 5,000. How do you marry this whole notion of being a cost advantage country for manufacturers to build their business there, but at the same time trying to tap into the domestic market and see how many consumers are there to actually want to buy and able to buy in the domestic market?
Yeah, so I think Indonesia is positioned well in this dynamic. First of all, I think what I mentioned is Indonesia becoming a global EV hub, right? It doesn't mean that most of our production will consume domestically. I think having those advantage of having those large resources as well as cheap labor costs in terms of other mineral producing countries, I think we can become the manufacturing hub and we can export these products globally, right? And in terms of domestic market, yes, what you mentioned is correct. Right now, our GDP per capita is still comparably low compared to the ASEAN region. But we do have a demographic advantage. We have a rising middle class. But all in all, I think in the domestic market, the key to success in EV market will pierce government support, right? I think this is what the government is trying to do. They plan to release what you call a subsidy for EV purchase. I think for the two wheels EV have been approved last week from the government. The four wheel is still in the discussion. But if there's a support from the government in terms of subsidy, I think it will give a boost for EV consumption in domestically as well.
What's also interesting is that while traditionally you can have manufacturers build plants near raw materials and resources, there seems to be this whole notion of getting close to Indonesia because of all the other factors, not just labor costs, not just about the nickel prices and the availability of nickel, but just to be in Indonesia. Maybe you can talk more towards that. Why is it that Indonesia is attracting more foreign investors compared to other ASEAN countries, particularly from Malaysia, actually, and why people don't want to come to Malaysia and Singapore, for that matter? They go to either Vietnam or Indonesia.
Yeah, I think what has changed, I think, is the investment climate, I think. And this is what we think has been successful, is the current government administration has successfully, you know, improved the Indonesian climate for investment. I think they have done a lot in the past 10 years in terms of foreign direct investment. They have streamlined the unnecessary, you know, the process to do investment here. And I think what is the powerful force is that the current government is very ambitious to, you know, this downstreaming nickel industry. Like if what happened in 2017, right, they banned the nickel ore for export. So this has attracted many foreign investment coming here because they want to tap into Indonesia rich resources, right? And I think that's one of the most powerful forces, is mostly is support from the government, we think, aside from those advantage of having cheap labor costs and huge domestic market.
We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about commodities and perhaps the industry at large. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me a Maybank analyst joining us from Indonesia, Richard Sherman. Richard, let's talk a little bit more about the outlook for nickel prices. It seems like if you Google nickel prices, it's not as per what do you call this, volatile as per other commodities, but it has seen some spikes in recent years and then dip again. Maybe you can talk to us the whole on the whole notion of nickel prices, the mechanism behind it, and where you think the outlook is going to be for 2023.
Yeah, so I think in terms of for nickel price, we are actually quite positive for nickel. I think we believe the price for nickel will remain elevated in 2023. And I think if we talk about nickel, here we need to differentiate nickel into two segments. I think one is class one nickel, and secondly is class two nickel. For class one nickel, we think the continued demand growth for EV and battery will likely put the balance to be in the deficit in the next few years. If we talk with an EV maker, for example, like Hyundai, actually their purchase inquiry is very strong, right? But they are not able to produce their car on a daily basis, because simply there's no battery to be put in their car, right? So I think demand is not a concern, but rather on the supply. And from the supply side, for class one nickel, we don't see a significant increase in class one supply over the next 1 and 2 years. Majority of Indonesia HPAL plan project, it start on 2025 onwards. So I think we think the balance will likely to remain in deficit in the 1-2 years ahead, which will keep price for nickel for the class one to remain high. Now for class two, I think the market is quite different. It is quite highly oversupplied, I think, since last year, because demand for class two, which is mostly for stainless steel, is fairly weak last year, right? Because China, they still struggle with their zero COVID policy, and Europe still struggle with their energy crisis. Meanwhile, supply from Indonesia continued to be ramped up last year. So it pushed the balance for class 2 into a surplus territory. And price for class 2 has started to diverge against the class 1 prices. But this year, I think the story will be different. And especially with the China reopening, we think this will lead a significant recovery for demand for stainless steel. So we expect that this China reopening will absorb some of the excess supply in class 2. So it will help to narrow the class 2 prices against class 1. But overall, I think the market for class 2 will still be oversupplied, but the gap discount with class 1 will narrow. But all in all, we think the margin for, you know, these metal companies will expand significantly this year, because not only that nickel price we expect to remain elevated, but margin is going to be helped with the normalizing energy prices, such as coal and oil price, because coal and oil is contribute quite a huge cost in their cost structure. And we have seen coal and oil prices has come down by 30-40% from its peak. So we think this will provide a tailwind for margin, especially in next few quarters.
There's a few things that I want to ask you in follow-up to this. Number one is the World Trade Organization's ruling on nickel export ban and what it means to Indonesia. Perhaps the backstory there is that the administration by Pak Jokowi has banned the unprocessed mineral back in August 2019, and then the EU has launched a challenge at the WTO in November 2019. The WTO panel ruling concurred with the EU claiming that neither the prohibition of nickel exports nor the domestic processing requirement was in line with global trade rules. And Pak Jokowi last month has said that even though there is a WTA ruling on nickel export ban, Indonesia will continue to appeal on this ban and argues that it is favoring the EU in a dispute over this story. So how do you think this whole conversation is going to be panning out? That's the first part. The second one is, how do you think all these companies are looking at this and seeing how investment landscape is going to be impacted? Do you think that this is going to be impacting the investment landscape negatively or positively or neutral on this?
Yeah, I think this discussion is still very long, right? I think the government, they still want to proceed on the next step to argue basically what we have done. I think the current administration, they realize, right, that this downstreaming process is really needed for Indonesia, right? Because for so many years, Indonesia have been only exporting nickel ore, right, which has a very low value added, right? And I think the current administration, they want the domestic market to push to produce more value added, right? So I think even with the current ruling, I think the current administration will not change its policy. I think they will continue to push this downstreaming because it has given us a lot of benefit, right, in terms of our trade balance, in terms of our job employment, as well as economic value added, especially on those northern side of Indonesia. So I think government will continue to push this downstreaming nickel industry. And for the second question, I think in terms of investment climate, I think it doesn't change quite much. I think a global EV maker, they understand Indonesia position, having those huge resources. They want to tap into these huge resources. And I think the government also provide strong support for global EV makers that want to invest here. It's just that the government don't want us to just export a low value added product, you know. As long as they refine it domestically and then they sell it abroad, I think it's fine. It's just the government, they don't want us to just export a low value added product. I think that's the case from our side, I think.
Richard, let's talk a little bit more about some of the company specifics that is part of this whole investment landscape of Indonesia and ASEAN. In specifics, I want to learn more about Tesla. Their shares have surged 33%. This is their best performance since May 2013, actually. Elon Musk has argued that the production is going to be 2 million vehicles as of this year. But there's a lot of ideas on Elon Musk fulfilling the statements that he makes. There's a lot of times that he, I don't know whether he outright lies or the fact that he might not necessarily have the capacity to meet his own objectives. But that is the case with Elon Musk. Having said that, sometimes he does fulfill these kind of lofty promises, and that's when he shocks the market. Maybe you can talk to us in terms of what to expect from Tesla per se. And then how do you compare and contrast this with, say, BYD and Hyundai and many other car manufacturers that, while may not have a CEO like Elon Musk, they tend to fulfill their own promises if they speak to the investors? And how do you marry these kind of conversations for 2023 outlook for Indonesia and beyond?
Yeah, so we don't cover, you know, these stocks directly, right? So we don't have a, you know, like a fundamental opinion on this, on these stocks. But that's the thing, right? I think these companies, their growth is exponential, right? We have seen like Tesla growing, like their sales growing every year by double. BYD, Hyundai is also the same. Report from IEA last year, they expect, you know, EV car sales to grow by about 10 times over the next 10 years, right? Last year sales was about like maybe 4 to 5 million car sales per year, and they expect the number to grow into 20 to 30 million by 2030. So I think there's a huge market for EV for EV sales, right? And all of those EV cars, they require a battery, right? And one of the most important resources in the battery is nickel, right? So that's why we are very bullish on this nickel industry, and especially it will benefit Indonesia, us, because we have strong, we have large resources, and because the demand is very strong, and there are many, you know, direct investment coming in into Indonesia, like Hyundai, and I think potentially other company will come as well. This opens up many numerous opportunity for Indonesia company to partner with them and supply its raw material for this company. And for those reason, we do see, we do expect earnings growth to grow exponentially for Indonesia company in our coverage. It's basically, I think that's the beauty, right, of this rising EV trend.
Okay, having said that, Maybank has initiated coverage on Indonesia's metal sector, Merdeka Copper in particular, Vale, and Aneka Tambang. Maybe you can talk to us about the outlook on these sectors the moment you have started coverage. Are you bullish on these kind of sectors, or perhaps there's some double thinking on this?
Yeah, sure. So we just initiated our report, right? And we have a positive view on the metal sectors. And I think this global shift toward clean energy will continue to drive significant demand for mineral, especially nickel, over the next 10 to 20 years. And we have seen many foreign investment coming here, opening up numerous opportunity for new growth projects. And I think that will be the driver for Indonesia metal companies going forward. And keeping that in mind, basically our top picks in the sectors, we do like INCO, Vale Indonesia. And I think INCO is the best proxy for class one nickel for two reasons. One, because currently they produce nickel made and their pricing are pegged to LME, right? So there's no concern on widening gap between class one and class two price. And secondly, they also have a few growth projects in the pipeline. They are partnering up with Huayou, a Chinese company and a pioneer in HPAL technology. They plan to build two HPAL plants with a total capacity of 180,000 tons. One is going to produce in 2025 and the other one is on 2027. So I think earnings is expected to grow exponentially in 2025 onwards. And the other one, we also like Merdeka Copper, MDKA. They have a very well diversified asset. Among them are in coal, copper, as well as nickel. And we know all of them are among the hot commodities nowadays, right? And they have three operating assets and three growth projects in the pipeline. In the nickel segments, they have a very close relationship with Tsingshan. They are the largest stainless steel producer, and they are also a pioneer in HPAL technology along with Huayou. And I think it's just a matter of time until the company will build HPAL plant in the near future. and given that their mines is very suitable to supply to an HPAL refining process. And in the gold and the copper project, they have one greenfield project called Tujuh Bukit Copper, which is can be considered as one of the largest copper mines comparable to Grasberg operated by Freeport. So we can expect the earnings to grow exponentially in the next 10 years for the company, driven by these new projects. And our forecast sees earnings to grow by about 32% CAGR over the next 10 years for this company.
Final question for you, Richard, is the US FOMC meeting is going to come out 31st January, 1st February. There's a lot of conversation to how the markets in ASEAN is going to hold our rates or increasing it. Bank Negara surprised most analysts in terms of holding the interest rate at 2.75%. Everybody was widely expecting a 25 bps increase. How would Indonesia react to the FOMC decision, whether to increase it or at least slowing down instead of a 75 bps hike? It will be lower than that. That's the expectations, at least. How do you react towards this kind of rate hike cycle across the globe and, of course, in Indonesia per se?
Yeah, I think our head of research is Jeff. He also just published his report on Indonesia's strategy. And he mentioned in the report that one of the single biggest risks for GCI and basically other global equity market this year is on the Fed, right? Whether they will keep the terminal rate currently focused at 5%, right, until the end of the year. I think the pace of Fed hike is already expected, right, to slowly decline, right, only 25 bips this year, probably another hike in March. But if Fed decided to, you know, keep the terminal rate until the end of the year, I think in that scenario, of course, Bank Indonesia, they will likely to hike more, probably at least at 7% to keep up with the US yield, right? And all of this will trigger a lot of volatility in the GCI. So yeah, I think it's interesting to see where on the next FOMC meeting. I think the 25 bps hike is already expected by the consensus, but I think investor is paying more attention on the outlook from the Fed for the rest of the year, whether they will keep the rate high until end of year, or they started to see some weakness in the economy. So likely they will start to pivot maybe toward the end of the year. I think that's some of the things that investors are looking out for the next FOMC meeting. Yep.
Wrapping things up, Richard, when I speak to my guests on this show, they're generally quite happy and quite interested with how Indonesia is panning out. They're also quite interested into how Malaysia is going to raise our standards in terms of meeting the demands and challenges that the globe is providing, but at the same time, perhaps even assailing the risk and competition that is coming out of Indonesia. You know, in your own personal opinion, do you feel that the mood is quite buoyant in Indonesia, particularly amongst Indonesians? How do you see the mood is reflected there? Because in Malaysia, the cost of living is a big problem. Inflation is a big problem. Everything is a big problem. The only thing that we can walk away from is perhaps we have enough prime ministers to go around for the next 5 years. Just one more is enough, I guess, for now. That's the mood, right, yes, for Malaysia. But for Indonesia, how are things? Because the presidential election is looming. There's a whole idea, yeah, of foreign investors coming in. What is it like there in Jakarta and beyond?
Yeah, I think so far, everything has been great. You know, our economy has grown very strong in the past few years. And I think the tailwind from this commodity boom that we have seen in the past 2 years, right, starting to have a, you know, impact on Indonesia economy as a whole, right? We have seen consumption is very strong last year. And we do expect the consumption growth to maybe, you know, slightly deteriorate from last year, as commodity price has started to come down. But overall, I think the economy is still very solid. Inflation, we don't see any concern. Inflation remains stable right now. Yeah, last year we do a hike in a fuel price, but so far, I think with the strong consumption, I think it's still not a concern for most of Indonesia population right now. Yeah, so And I think with this global economy started to, you know, becoming more risk-averse, I would say, right, ahead of this, you know, potential U.S. recession, I think Indonesia economy is very much protected, right? We have a very low correlation with U.S. economy. So because most of our GDP is contributed with domestic consumption, right? And our domestic consumption is pretty much in a good form due to this strong commodity as well as this downstreaming. It has started to give an impact to our overall you know, consumption base. So overall, I think the mood is quite good here in Indonesia.
Thank you very much. Yep. To be honest, I'm very, very happy for Indonesia, but at the same time, I'm very concerned about Malaysia as well. And you know, you can't see this kind of optimism in Malaysia the way we see it in Indonesia. And of course, we really, really want to see how ASEAN can grow collectively. But for now, it's really good news all the way for Indonesia. One more item, I still can't let you go. Risk outlook. Will the new presidency create a situation where there could be a risk, or most of the administrative items is already going to be carried on, even if we see a new administration in place?
Yeah, sure. So basically, we have talked with so many investors, right, in the past 1 month. And I think one of the most strongest concern that many investors has shared with us is is indeed the upcoming presidential election in 2024, right? Whether the new administration, they will have new policy regarding the nickel industry, right? Of course, there's a lot of variable regarding this issue because we still do not know who will be the next president and what will the focus of the next administration be, right? But we believe that even with the new administration, we do not think they will derail Indonesia's ambition to become a global manufacturing hub for EV. I think they will understand that the current administration has done and the benefit that it has bring us in terms of our trade balance, right? Nickel-based export product in 2022 grow to $30 billion per year from just like $1 billion in the, 7 years ago. So it has given us a lot of benefit. So I don't think the new administration will change that benefit. So we don't expect there will be much changes in policy in this space, but we do aware that this could be an overhang and risk ahead of the sectors, ahead of the elections.
Thank you very much, Richard. Yep. We need to speak to you a lot more moving forward. That was Richard Soherman of Maybank Sekuritas Indonesia joining us from Jakarta. If you missed any part of this interview, just head on to astrawin.com, look for Notepad. You can also find these kind of conversation that can be gotten on Maybank Sekuritas Indonesia's website. There's a lot of research report on this. In particular, one that took my attention is the Indonesian metal paving way of becoming a global EV hub, published on January 2nd this year. It's a riveting read. Thanks, and catch you in the next one.